Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez in for Tom Hudson. Well, the South Florida Sun Sentinel called for Marco Rubio's resignation as the senator this week on on the grounds that he's missed too many Senate votes in D.C. At the GOP debate this week, he fired back.
Yeah, let me say, I read that editorial today with a great amusement. It's actually evidence of the bias that exists in the American media today.
All right, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush jumped in on the opportunity to respond.
But Marco, when you signed up for this, this was a six-year term, and you should be showing up to work. I mean, literally, the Senate, what is it, like a French work week? You get like 3 days where you have to show up? You can campaign or just resign and let someone else take the job.
I don't remember you ever complaining about John McCain's vote record. The only reason why you're doing it now is because we're running for the same position and someone has convinced you that attacking me is going to help you.
All right, lots of talk that Rubio won the debate. What do you think? Who quote-unquote won the debate? What do you want to hear discussed in these presidential debates? We want to hear your thoughts. You can give us a call, 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. Or tweet us at WLRN. You can also find us on our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/ The Florida Roundup. Want to bring in all of the guests. Jim DeFede from CBS4 still with us. Rosemary O'Hara from the Sun Sentinel editorial page editor. She is joining us today. Rosemary, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
All right. And Mark Caputo, Politico's Florida's politics reporter, is in studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Mark. And then, of course, joining us by phone from Washington, D.C. is Matt Laszlo, WLRN's Washington correspondent. Matt, welcome back. Oh, you know what? Let me get him in here. That's why. Matt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, Matt. Thanks for joining us. All right, so real quickly, Rosemary, tell us about this South Florida Sun Sentinel editorial calling for Marco Rubio. By the way, I don't have it confirmed, but supposedly he skipped an Iowa event to go back to D.C. for a vote today.
Well, oh, good. You know, I guess here's what I would say. He convinced us that he wanted to go to Washington to fight for us, to work for us. Shortly after he got there, it was clear he wanted to run for president. He's frustrated by the job. And so he's launched this campaign. And good for him, you know. All the success, give it all you got. But if you can't do your day job, step aside, run for president, but don't leave the seat empty
You supported him in 2010. The Sentinel did. I mean, is it just because of this issue that you're turning around on it?
He criticized the liberal media for calling him out for not doing his job. My point is that when did it become okay for people who are running for higher office not to do their day job? We did support him in 2010. We supported Mitt Romney for president. And we want people, to do what they said they're going to do.
Mark? Yeah, I'd answer that in two ways. It became okay de facto, at least since 2004, which is when I look back and look at the stats. John Kerry, relative to this period of time when he was in the U.S. Senate, missed more votes proportionally in an aggregate than Marco Rubio. John McCain, at this period of time, relative to the 2008 campaign and 2012 campaign, missed more votes the 2008 campaign missed more votes. Bob Graham did. Marco Rubio made some of these statements. And also, it became kind of de facto more okay when Congress is unable to do anything. I mean, basically, they can barely name a post office. When they do get in there and actually vote something out, it's usually horrible. If something passes the Senate, it's not going to pass the House. And I think a lot of people get the joke. Does it make it okay? No. I actually do like Bush's idea of docking pay for guys who don't show up, just because I think they should all be basically paid nothing and then maybe paid on peace labor.
But you know what, Matt Laszlo, I'm wondering, is this a conversation that's going on right now up in Capitol Hill, does it matter?
Well, I mean, it's funny, and even when I hear from Rubio calling this the bias of the media, I laugh at that because I've written the same story about McCain, I've written the same story about Kerry, I wrote it about Obama. So this is something that any sitting lawmaker opens himself up to, but it does raise serious questions. I mean, especially when it comes down to committee work. And one thing Rubio has said is the job of a senator is, you know, it's constituent services, all this. So, I mean, it's kind of admitting the farce of being a current lawmaker, where some of these lawmakers admit that to be a sitting U.S. senator, you have to spend 75% of your time fundraising. The work still gets done because they have overworked and underpaid staffers that are these young kids who do the work of a U.S. senator. I mean, so maybe he has a point, so maybe we should just change the legislative branch a little bit.
Jim defeated it. So it just sounds like basically they're trying to find something to stick on Rubio, or is Rosemary correct? He's not doing his job.
Yes. Okay. To both. Right. And look, this was an opening. This was an opening for those critics of Marco Rubio to try to use this. Jeb jumped on it. The real question is, was Jeb smart politically to have tried to ride this horse? You know, it certainly backfired on him in the debate. I don't think the moment was as bad as a lot of people sort of make out. I do think Rubio got the better of it, largely because the body language. It's like Rubio, during that debate, said what he said and literally almost turned his back on Jeb and just sort of like dismissively, just sort of like, okay, I've taken care of that, and then move forward. And Jeb was floundering to, but, and then the CNBC anchors just sort of, you know, never brought it back up. And Jeb needed to... Jeb knew that he was going to say that. He knew that Marco was ready, and he needed to have the counter punch. He needed not just have his punch and know that Marco was going to punch back, but he needed to then seize the moment and get the last word in, and he failed to do it.
But the
and
rules
that's
of the debate
perception.
Didn't let him do that.
Forget the rules. Yeah,
exactly. Rules, schmules. I mean, you know, Mike Huckabee did a good job saying, look, I'm not getting enough time. And it turns out he got more time than Jeb Bush because he did that. Another thing, it's not just the body language, but it was the audio language. You heard the crowd erupt in applause when Rubio got that. So it's basically the crowd was like, ooh, burn. So Jeb opened himself up to it. And Jeb also got punked in a similar way by Donald Trump in the second debate, where Donald Trump just talked over and said, excuse me, and then Jeb shut up. And then so here it is again, Jeb's like raising his hand like, oh, can I defend myself? And then they're like, no, you know. And then what does Jeb do? He sits in his corner, and the rest of the debate he had the least amount to say. He had the least airtime of anybody.
But if he was more assertive, then some people would then jump in and say, oh, now he's just being rude.
Fine.
Right? I mean, you can't. You have to be. That's
hey,
what you
have
to
you noticed
Donald
who the rude
Trump.
Guys?
Donald
yeah, the rude
Trump.
Guys are winning.
Donald Trump.
The rude guys are winning. Yeah. Except for Carson.
Let me put it out, by the way, real quickly. The number is 800-743-9576. Tell us what you think about the debate. If you're watching these debates, you know, I mean, just overall your take on it. But what do you want to hear? What you know, whether it's the questions or what do you want to see in the behavior of the different candidates? You know what? So let's talk about what happened, because when you go and you try to find out who won, you can go to any source and they'll tell you this person, this person, this person. Okay. What we gathered, Rosemary, is that Rubio had a great night. Jeb Bush did not. Trump is still up there. Ben Carson held his ground. Chris Christie started to show up a little bit. I don't know. What did you get?
Well, all of that, what you just said, and what part of the criticism in the aftermath was, it wasn't substantive. We wanted to have policy. But you know what? That's not really what people want to hear. Jeb Bush, to me, is a man of policy.
They want to be entertained?
Not entertained?
And Marco, you know, talks really good. I mean, he can pivot and dodge and weave, and so he won because he was so successful at maneuvering. But if you peel back the layer of Marco, where's the substance? What has he done?
Here's the problem. When Jeb Bush got into this, or thinking about getting in this race 2 years ago, he thought this was going to be a race about competence. He thought this was going to be a race about who can control the levers of government most efficiently. You had the VA scandal. You had the Obamacare website rollout was a disaster. And he was going to say, I have a proven record of being able to operate government efficiently. So he was going to be the competent guy. That's the role of a governor. That's why governors were supposed to be the nominee this time out. It turns out it shifted from being about competence in government to who's willing to burn down the government. And Jeb's not willing to burn down the government.
Matt Laszlo, real quickly, is it more about showmanship than it is about actual policy?
Well, I just wanted to add, my big takeaway from the debate was that Bush's tie wasn't even straight. I'm like, his aides really need to stand up and just help him at least straighten out his tie. It was just nagging me the entire time. And I think he's just kind of in a little bit of a free fall. And I think one thing that he could really take advantage of is just push the aides aside a little bit. He just doesn't seem like he's true to himself. And I think that's where Rubio is shining. He's able to really appeal to the millennials while talking about substantive issues, even if it is just kind of bashing the White House and not really being proscriptive.
All right, so, but you know what? Here's another thing. So we talk about the way candidates behave, how they speak, and of course, what the message is. But you've mentioned it. It seems like the ruder you are or the more eccentric you are, you're going to get more attention, more questions, more airtime. It's just
there's an old saying that politics is show business for ugly people. And in the end, people want to elect personalities. That's what this is about. And if what Jeb Bush is doing right now, Jeb Bush is the old crotchety McCain versus the young hip Obama. And it's like, congratulations, Jeb Bush. You've assembled your brother's 2004 campaign team, effectively. And you're running John McCain's 2008 campaign, as far as your message is concerned. And you're losing just the way McCain did.
You know,
and he refuses to change, and he has this idea that logic is going to prevail, and it doesn't. These are campaigns. You sell a president the same way you sell toothpaste. And he should know this because his own campaign is marketing Jeb Bush as joyous. Jim, you've covered Jeb Bush. Would you ever say, describe Jeb Bush in one word, and the word would be joyous? No.
20 years of Jeb Bush, joyous does not come to
joyous
mind.
Joyous does not. He's smart. He's wonky.
Acerbic.
He's intelligent. Yeah, exactly. But one thing he's not is joyous. And he claims he's the joyful tortoise. And he's a disruptor who's going to upset the Tallahassee establishment. Jeb Bush built a Tallahassee establishment of incredibly wealthy lobbyists, including the husband of his current and top and longtime strategic advisor, Sally Bradshaw, who got rich because Jeb was in office. So, you know, can the disruptor stuff as well.
Matt Laszlo, toothpaste? Sell it like toothpaste?
Well, the one thing I call this in my academic writing, we're in this new era of pop politics. There's a couple of House members, or one House member who was on The Real World, and he was a star on The Real World, and now he's in office. I think one thing I'm hearing from you, which you're describing pretty accurately, the American electorate, but isn't that such an indictment on us who are consuming politics, which is supposed to be heady discourse? It's supposed to be boring policy, and we want the shiny... No?
No.
And my frustration is just... in the debate was just how so many people are going after the media. You know,
although CNBC sort of deserved it.
Yeah, they really did.
Yeah.
They're going after the media, but let's get to the debates then. We look at these debates and the sort of questions that have been asked. So, I mean, we had the topic of fantasy football. Religion comes up. These sort of questions, I mean, is any question fair to a politician if we're just going to sell it like toothpaste, or should we just get to the hard issues?
Well, I guess in some ways, you know, people do want to know what your tax policy is. But on the other hand, you know, it's like, do you want to have a beer with the guy? And so does he even know what fantasy football is? Bush Sr., did he know how to work the supermarket price scanner? So is it a real guy? Is it a real personality? Is some of the reflection of those fun questions. So it's got to be a mix.
All right. I want to go to the phones again. The number is 800-743-9576. Let me go to Hollywood first. And I, you know what, please, I don't want to mess up this. Siobhan? Am I saying that? Siobhan, thank you. All right. Well, tell me what you think about the performances in this in these debates. What do you think about the debates overall?
Well, I'm a yellow dog Democrat, so I haven't watched the Republican debates. So that part, I'm not a Bush partisan, but I think the former governor made an excellent point, and I'd like to ask two questions. The first one being, would Marco Rubio accept that excuse that everybody has done it from his children? I just think this is horrible. He gets paid to do his salary. I mean, he gets paid to do the work, and he accepts his salary. The other thing is, you all have, you know, gone back to the horse trading and the polling and the, you know, how is the debate? Why not talk about the substance of how people go to Washington and don't do their job? It is, you know, it is essentially stealing, theft of company time. And the fact that Senator Rubio, ostensibly, you know, an upstanding Christian Catholic, would take money under circumstances like this, I think is really distressing, and it goes to his character. And I applaud the Sun Sentinel for their editorial and wish they had done it. I actually wrote to former Representative Jim Davis when he did it, when he was rubbing for governor.
Javon, let me stop you there for one second, because you had two questions, but, you know, Mark, you wanted to jump in.
Well, just on a few things. Number one, you know, the Republic survived when Barack Obama missed far more votes in aggregate than Rubio. Yes, it's a slightly different period, but you know, let's not fool ourselves. I applaud the Sun Sentinel for writing it because, hey, let's say it, let's get it out there. And also, you know, Rosemary is on Fox. You know, finally we actually have newspapers once again re-entering the debate. But let's not fool ourselves about, well, how come we're not talking about all of these policies? Because here's the reality. When you talk about tax policy, we tax too little and we spend too much. And you can find very little agreement in Washington over time to handle both sides of that ledger. And so what we have is a current system of gridlock, which, by and large, speaking of what we were talking about earlier, is ensured by our own populace. If all Democrats actually shut up and realized that, oh, midterm elections matter, and decided to vote in midterms as well as in presidential election years, yes, it might be a little more of a different environment in Washington, but it's not.
All right, let me go over to Peter, who is in Palmetto Bay. Peter, welcome to the program. Oh, you know what? I apologize, Peter. I just threw you off.
You killed him.
I know. Let me go to Steve in Delray Beach. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Just a couple of quick comments. I kept thinking what Bush should have said to Marco, and I was thinking he should have looked at the camera, taken a beat, and said, John McCain is a friend of mine. I know John McCain. And Marco, you are no John McCain, or something like that.
No, what he should, the line he should have said was when Marco starts comparing his absences to Obama, you know, he sort of said, do you really want to liken yourself to Barack Obama? I thought this was about moving past Obama, and you just said you're just basically another Obama.
But you're pointing out basically what Jeb Bush was doing for the rest of the night. Damn it, I should have said that.
Well, he should have been prepped. He should have been prepped for that. It's such an easy comeback to have. You know, here's what I'm going to say. That's
with 14 million people watching you, nothing is easy.
Well, hold on, Steve. That's an interesting point. Steve, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. He's talking about being prepped, but look, he was prepped. These are politicians.
Where did
this
French work week come from?
Like, you know? Oh, yeah, it's like next you're going to pull out a copy of the Aeneid and read me something, right?
When in doubt, blame the French.
Let me ask you this before we finish up on time. So we've seen two Democrats jump out of the race. You know, still a lot of Republicans. Who's going to be dropping out anytime soon? What do you think, Rose? What do you think, Rosemary?
Oh, my God. You know, I have been wrong about every prediction I've made.
So don't make a prediction.
I didn't think Marco would get in the race, and look at where he is now.
And I'm not going to ask you who's going to win the Super Bowl either, then.
I'm actually going to create a FanDuel site for the politicians so that you can pick which ones you want to lose next.
No one is going to be dropping out soon. There's zero incentive to do it. We got another 10 days until the next debate. May as well stay in. Free TV time. You get to stand up there, obliviate, and say whatever the heck you want.
And I think Jeb stays in. Jeb's not getting out anytime
soon. No. South Carolina.
Okay. Right. And Matt Laszlo, what do you think?
I think everyone in the JV debate should just take one for the team, and because who even watched that?
And you're talking about that first debate with, of course, the candidates who are not
George
getting
Pataki,
up on the main stage.
I'm telling you, Pataki's going to make
Santorum moment. Santorum, baby.
Pataki's going to make the comeback.
Well, we've got months. We've got months and months and months and more debates to come. All right, Jim DeFede again with CBS4. Rosemary O'Hara, Sun Sentinel editorial page editor, and Mark Caputo, Politico's Florida politics reporter. We also heard from Matt Laszlo, WLRN's Washington correspondent. Folks, we'll be back on this topic, I'm sure, plenty of times. Thank you so much. All right, coming up next, the Department of Children and Families is facing a crisis. Questions continue to plague the agency over a number of child deaths. What are the solutions to keeping our kids safe? That's coming up next on the Florida Roundup.